Mace Finnegan and Donick, 105.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. It is 5:00 on a Monday, so let's welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee to the program. Vanderbilt coming off of a 31-24 win against LSU. The Commodores host Missouri this Saturday afternoon. College game day will be on campus as part of that matchup. Clark, first of all, congratulations on the win. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Obviously, we're back to work on Missouri, but excited about this opportunity this week and, you know, ready to get back at it.
Clark, earlier we were listing off all of the first-time senses for Vanderbilt. There are new ones every week. For example, as you know, your program is ranked in the top 10 for the first time in nearly 80 years. It was the first win against LSU since 1990, so on and so forth. Rebuilding this program has been a laborious process for you. So to see the atmosphere at First Bank Stadium on Saturday, which looked electric on television, just describe for us how it feels for you to see the Vanderbilt community embrace your team.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I respond more to my team. It feels good to see my team have success. They deserve the success. They've worked hard for it. And that's kind of my main focus. You know, when you do something with people you care about, it's hard, it's challenging. You stay in the fight with them and you find results and breakthrough moments. That's what's most special. And then obviously to see a community enjoy that and to join in that with us, you know, we've got room for more too. There was a lot of purple in that stadium on Saturday also. So we'd like to see that tip a little more to a home field advantage. The college football environment was great. You know, there was a lot of people there that cared about our game and they were into it. But, you know, we want to keep pulling people in from Nashville community, from the Vanderbilt community. My focus is just on the team and enjoying this time with them.
Clark, Diego Pavia bore the brunt of the loss at Alabama after his two red zone turnovers, and he had to wait an extra week to respond, which I imagine was tough for him. Will you share with us how Diego handled the aftermath of the Alabama loss and what he did behind the scenes that led to such an emphatic response from him on Saturday?
I think he just was himself on Saturday. I don't see it as much a response. I think he reset himself over the bye week. And truth be told, he bore the brunt of the responsibility against Alabama. But honestly, you know, the turnovers are what we point to. I mean, there's any time you play, it's 11 people on the field. And he also had some really incredible moments in that game, too. So, you know, I think the bye week was a chance for everyone to reset. You know, I think he just doubled down on his process and got centered and grounded and played his game on Saturday. And obviously, just like any game, it's never perfect. But when he's playing to his personality and when he's playing loose and letting it rip, you know, he puts us in really good positions offensively. And so I was glad to see him get back to himself and you know, just want to encourage him to continue to stay in that process and keep focusing on things that matter most. But he's a great teammate and a great team member, and obviously we're lucky to have him.
We'll talk with Vanderbilt's head football coach Clark Lee coming off a victory against LSU 31-24. Now, coach, after the game, you did a interview on the field, and it just seemed like that game bore a little bit more emotion. Was it just the emotion of what the game, what it entails, and what it takes to, you know, stay going for four quarters, or was it something a little bit more?
You know, I'm impressed that you caught my emotion in that interview. I thought I hit it well enough, but obviously we're getting to know each other a little bit here, D-Mace.
Exactly.
You know, that's good. You know, I think it's just all of it. I mean, you play these games, you're so in the moment. And, I mean, I go back to the team. I just care about this team, the staff. There's so much love and appreciation and connection there. And we're giving everything we have and we're investing in this thing. And, you know, there's only, so much time in the week that you can actually kind of sit back and appreciate it. And in the aftermath of a big win, there's really nothing that's pressing for me to have to focus my attention on. And so sometimes those moments are the most emotional where, you know, you kind of can just feel the all of it, just the emotion of what we've, how far we've come, what we're putting into it, what we're creating with respect to the energy that's rippling out into our community. And so that was it. I mean, I'm very proud of our team, very happy for our team, very happy for our community. And I think the emotion is more gratitude than anything else. Just grateful to be here and to be in this moment with this group of guys.
We talk so much about Diego, and rightfully so, he's earned every bit of what he's gotten thus far. But in order to, you know, be a great leader, which he is, you have to be able to lead the individuals, and they have to be able to step up when the moment comes. I saw in two separate games where the tight ends were being utilized more than I've seen in previous weeks. One was Georgia. They used their tight ends, and they had some good ones. And you used your tight ends. And Cole Spence, I think he had, what, three catches before the game? Before the other night, he ends up with five catches, ends up with eight for the season. He was a big part of what y'all were doing offensively Saturday. Was it a concerted effort to get the tight ends into the game? We know Eli Stowers is going to get his because he's, if not the best tight end, one of the best. But when you have guys like Cole Spence, big 6'7" guy, catch radius is out of this world, where he can also show that, hey, listen, I need to contribute as well.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up, and obviously we believe in all our tight ends, and that room is become a great room for our offense. You know, Manny and Gabe Fisher do a lot of the blocking and a lot of the thankless work. Gabe Fisher is really more of a fullback if we had those in 2025. Bryson Coleman's had his moments too as a young player that's coming on. Certainly, the thing that I love about Cole's performance is he the entire year. He missed most of the training camp with soft tissue issues. He had a knee coming out of the Charleston Southern game that held him out of practice in the Virginia Tech week. He's not missed any game time, but it's taken him some time to settle in this season. And he's played the game the right way. And you know as well as I do that you play the game the right way, the game rewards you. And Saturday was his chance to be on the receiving end on some passes. He did a great job coming down with him. I thought the first third down conversion he caught looked like an NFL catch. I mean, he it was a dig. It was thrown high. He went up and got it. It was really impressive. And I can't say enough about this guy, what he is day in, day out for our program, his willingness to do the thankless roles at a high level. And it's no surprise that he was rewarded and that he came through for us in a performance that helped us win.
Talking to Clark Lee, head football coach at Vanderbilt, and the telecast was interesting, Clark, and I did get to watch it in Winnipeg, fortunately, because the ABC affiliate up there preempted the game at 11:50 a.m. for the North Dakota State game, and so I had to flip over. Fortunately, it was on TSN2, so I had backup, so that was key.
Okay.
I was about to panic, but I want to. They did a great job, Jesse Palmer in particular, talking about what you do with your offensive line and flip-flop the sides to the strong side. But the guy in the middle, Jordan White, got a lot of attention with his look at just the way he's played. I'm curious how he kind of leads that group of five and it keeps together. It's really phenomenal to watch those guys work together.
Well, if you sat in their meetings, and sit with them, I'll sit with the safeties, I'll sit with the linebackers, kind of how I usually spend my time in our meeting time. But if you sat in the O-line meetings, you would hear him just how he processes the game, how he gets them in the right calls, gets them in the right protections, IDs the box correctly. He's so smart. He's so invested and committed to helping that group. And he starts every play for us that way. So he's an integral part of our offensive success. And, you know, just to watch him operate has been really a lot of fun for me. Obviously, we named him captain because he's earned that. And to have a captain in our offensive line is important. I think those guys have played really well. I think they played well physically on Saturday. I think they pass protected well and given Diego space in the pocket. And so, Jordan's a tone setter for us. But all of those guys, all five of them, have really stepped up for us and played well. They've gelled together. obviously we're going to need them to continue to do that, because if you can't win up front in the SEC, then you can't win games. And really, honestly, Saturday, I thought on both sides of the line of scrimmage, I was really pleased with the way the groups played.
I want to give you a chance to give a shout-out to a Montgomery Bell guy, because, and you already mentioned his name. Kevin Anglin was the one. Of course, Kevin Anglin, former Vanderbilt basketball player, now the head basketball coach at NBA. He's been there forever now. But Gabe Fisher, I watch him every time he goes in because Kevin called my attention to him. But some of the blocks that he makes, and one in particular on the big run that really puts you in position to win the game late, he's unbelievable with what he does when he's called upon.
Well, here I thought you were a hockey guy, Willie, and now you're proving to be a football guy. If you're finding the pullback blocks on the big runs, that's awesome. No, I showed that one to the team yesterday as we were kind of reviewing the game film. Gabe's as good as I've been around at that position, and that's being honest. I like to give him a hard time that I was a little more athletic than he is back in my day, but it's really not true. I mean, the thing he does well, he's physical, he's tough, but he has the ability to get body mass on his blocks and then sustain it. And so he covers those guys up. There's an initial force he delivers, but he's able to stay on body long enough for the back to get through clean. He's grown into just a really good player. And when we were recruiting him, I went and watched. I mean, honestly, I was at the game, and we weren't recruiting Gabe, and I kept watching, who is this guy that keeps showing up? He plays D-line, he plays O-line, and sure enough, it was Gabe Fisher. He's a state champion wrestler. He's a great kid, and so that was where the connection started. And he's done nothing but come here and excel on the field, off the field, and as a member of our team. So, you know, I appreciate you pointing that out. He deserves some shine. And on an offense where really it's 11 guys that have to do their jobs at a high level, I mean, Gabe is one that we can depend on and count on every time.
One theme that the broadcast hit on that they were echoing what you had told them throughout the week was the mentality of playing to win the game, being looser. You went for it on fourth down a couple of times. It was just a lot of confidence. And you mentioned that maybe that was part of the missing ingredient when you guys played Alabama. Tell us how you sort of took the team through that part of it, that mental part of it.
I think the bye week gave me a chance to spend some time to really reflect on how I felt coming out of the Alabama game, and I've watched that game a couple times all the way through. What I saw was a team that started out the right way, that lost a little momentum heading into half, but you know what we've done all year is we've come out in the second half, we've scored on our possession, and we've punched and counterpunched. And I felt like in that game, for some reason, it was as though we were suffocated in the second half. It didn't feel the same. Some of that was key drops. Some of that was, absorbing, too many yards on defense and not getting off the field. But we had our opportunities and we weren't able to capitalize. And that's not how this team plays. And so I think part of it is when you have expectations of how the game's going to go, there's almost an entitlement that can creep in. When it doesn't go that way, you forget how to respond, and you forget the control you have in response. And so we spent time messaging that through the week, and just, do we have the patience, to play the game out? Do we have the patience to, no matter what the game delivers to us, approach it with the right attitude, the right response? And at the end of the day, and to your point, just don't hold it too tight. It's still a game. We need to go out and have fun and enjoy it, and let's play loose and play free, because we're better when we do that. And that was the message, and I felt like the team responded well to that. Saturday was anything but perfect, and we never could quite sync up all at the same time, all three phases, but all three phases played a role in that win. And so there's a better performance out there for us. But I was really proud of the resilience of the group, and I thought it was an undaunted team and a team that never let go of the rope, and in a game like that, that becomes critical as we win by one score.
I'm curious, Pavia makes a great savvy play sliding down on the 1 yard line, knowing that the game is over, they're out of timeouts. Did he just know to do that, or is that something you guys have practiced? Did you remind him before the play that that was the situation?
Well, I got to give credit to Ben Coffin, who really does our game situation stuff and runs the book. And we train this a ton, Willie. It's something that we work weekly. We meet on it weekly. We work on it every day in training camp in our nightly walkthroughs, just special situation stuff. That's a first down, go down situation. essentially, once the opponent's out of timeouts, the point at which we can win the game by kneeling it out, you know, the only thing we can do to leave the game to chance at that point is score, give them a chance to score, and then kick an onside kick. And even as you're up to two scores, you can put the game out of reach just by kneeling it out. So we call it first down, go down. That was the situation. And, you know, Ben was alert to that. We reminded Diego during the timeout. And if you watch the play, I mean, again, I also want to give him credit because he's an incredibly smart football player. So to talk about these things and train them are one thing, but to execute it's another. And in that snap, the thing that I love that he does, if you watch it, is as he's running the ball, he looks to find the first down marker. He makes sure he's beyond it before he goes down. That way, if he's in a slide, they can't pull the ball back to before the sticks. You know, so he's hyper aware of where he is on the field. He made sure that he got the yardage and then some before he slid down. And, you know, smart teams win, and we want to be a smart team. And that's a situation where his execution in that moment allowed us to kneel the game out, allowed us to put it out of reach for LSU, and it's a great way to finish.
Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee has been our guest on D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick. He joins us every Monday during college football season. Clark, thank you as always for your time. Good luck Saturday against Missouri.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
Yep.
Missouri at Vanderbilt, a 2:30 p.m. kickoff at First Bank Stadium on Saturday. You may have heard this once or twice. College game day will be there to set up the matchup between the Tigers and the Commodores. 615-737-1025. We will take your reaction to Vanderbilt. We'll also get back into the Tennessee Titans. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Our show is proudly presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com.
I was on Broadway. I didn't get to check those out.
They weren't flashing the scores down there.
Ward lost the football. Scooped up by Jason. And it's a touchdown. There is a flag down. But Kalavon Jason in the end zone with the football. That's been a big problem for Cam Ward. Let's hear what the call is.
Holding. Offense. Number 17. That penalty's declined. The result of the flag.
Kalavon Jason with the touchdown.
Yet another sack fumble for Cam Ward. An easy touchdown for the New England Patriots as the Titans lose 31-13 to Mike Vrabel's Patriots. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Now, before the game, Adam Schefter had a report that the Titans were expected to simplify the offense for Cam Ward. Did you see a simplified offense, Derek Mason?
I saw it because I think people simplifying it doesn't mean that Cam isn't capable of running an offense the way it needs to be ran or capable of running it the way Brian Callahan wanted him to run it. I think a lot of this is it seemed like he had no trouble, you know, absorbing what they were throwing at him, so much so they even said, and he said it, I have no problem with, you know, what to, you know, me absorbing what they're throwing at me. But maybe sometimes that's not always the best for a young quarterback, just because he can absorb it and digest it and go out there and it may not be good for him because situations change in games, you know. Just because he knows doesn't mean everybody else knows. You know, you got two rookie receivers. You got two other individuals that just got here from other offenses. So you got essentially four of the six pass catchers at wide receiver, either their first year in the NFL or their first year in this offense. So they, with simplified means let's see what we do best. Let's see what we do best. And let's do those things as much as possible. Different formations, different personnel. But let's do, because if you look at every other, look at a lot of these teams. A lot of these plays are just being ran over and over and over again, but just out of different formations. They're not running a bunch of plays. They have some specialized plays that they run, whether it be fourth down or goal line, stuff like that. But every offense, they're running different plays, a wrinkle here or there, but they're running the same plays. It's just different formation and different personnel. Okay, what does Cam do well to really good? Let's concentrate on that. Let's get everybody on the same page on that. Let's try to use, you know, that ability he has. Let's try to, how do we best use that? As well as the other guys knowing it too. Again, he can know everything, but if they're not picking up on it, you got to stop your offense. Your offense slows down. And there's nothing wrong with young rookies or first-year guys in the offense to not know the whole ins and outs of an offense. There's going to be some mistakes here and there, or there's going to be some lag. That's why sometimes it's not best to sort of throw it all at one guy because, yeah, I may get it, but what about Adam and Willie? Or Willie may get it, but what about me and Adam?
I like how at least they were throwing some quicker, easier completions. You notice the last couple weeks his completion percentage is going up. I think is definitely
and that's
by
what
design.
He said. That's what they mean. Yeah. So take what the defense gives you and let's move from there.
And sort of, you know, let's teach Cam to go that way. Let's make the offense be more that. I think that's a good thing. Can I ask one thing about the fumbles? Is the ball slipping out of his hand a thing? I'm a little like if it happens one more time, I think we got to say it's a concern because this hasn't happened in bad weather games. Mm-mm. Like I wonder what will happen in bad weather games if it's raining or super cold. Like that's going to happen a couple times a season.
I can't,
unforced.
Right.
I can't think off of. If this was an issue in college or if it's an issue now because
I hope it's not a thing.
He had one 2 weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks ago or last week?
Last week against the
last
Raiders.
Last week
he had
Raiders,
one. He had one this
happened.
Week. Yep. But the other fumbles were caused by an individual either hitting him or swiping down at the ball.
Right.
So
like in the season opener against Denver, I think he fumbled it on his last play of the game, last-ditch effort, had to make a play, had to try to throw the ball, got sacked, I think, and fumbled the ball.
Yes.
Like right at the end of the game.
Right. That shouldn't really even count, honestly. But the 2 weeks in a row of the ball just flying, you hear scouts sometimes talking about the size of a guy's hands as something that people scout. I don't know if that's I'm just asking when something like that, as unique as that happens, 2 weeks in a row. I know they asked Cam about it after the game, and it's like simple. Yeah, I got to hold on to the ball. But I just hope this isn't something that follows him.
Skyler on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, the roster, the coach, and all of Cam's footwork and mechanics are why Cam Ward should have sat and learned this season. They threw the kid out there too early. You mentioned Drake May earlier because, of course, the Titans played Drake May yesterday, and Drake May did not start immediately. I do not recall off the top of my head how many games into the season Drake
six.
May started.
Okay, fifth six. Or sixth game.
Well, let me ask you this question. Like, this is a legitimate question. Had Drake May started immediately for the New England Patriots, would we not be seeing the same Drake May that we saw yesterday? Like, do 5 or 6 games? This is a legitimate question. I'm not trying to be like, you know, whatever.
Gotcha.
Hindsight 2020
right.
kind of thing. Yeah.
How much difference do you actually believe the 5 or 6 games Drake May did not play made in his development?
I don't know about Drake May, but we did report on a study.
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. And
I can find it.
It was from the Aaron Schatz group, right?
Yes, it was from The Athletic, written by Ben Standig last year.
And what it did was it tracked the percentage of quarterbacks that got the second contract from the team that drafted them and how many games they sat. And the statistics showed that quarterbacks who did not start week one and delayed either to the first 5, 6, 7 weeks – I forget what the line of demarcation was. I think it was 7 weeks. Or did not start at all their rookie year, fared better than quarterbacks who were thrown in there on week one. And that didn't even delineate first picks in the draft, because the difference that Cam Ward has, when you are the first pick in the draft, you're on the worst team in the league.
So this article was written by Ben Standig of The Athletic last September 2024, at the time Ben was covering the Washington Commanders. So he was writing it from the perspective of Jaden Daniels. So the sample is between 2000 and it looks like 2022.
Yeah. So Steve McNair did not fall into this. Steve McNair was just a few years before that. But remember, Steve McNair sat almost two entire years.
So it was first round quarterbacks, looking at how many of those quarterbacks received a second contract with the team that drafted them based on when they started for the first time. So week one starters of the 22 in the sample, eight received a second consecutive contract, eight of 22. Joe Burrow, Joe Flacco, Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck, Kyler Murray, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, and Matthew Stafford. Debuting before week seven, 43 rookies in the category, 13. So 13 of 43 received a second contract. Debut week seven or later, 13 in the category, six received a second contract. Jared Goff, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Eli Manning, Tua, and Michael Vick. Starting debut after drafted season, 10 rookies in the sample, six received a second consecutive contract. But listen to these names.
So
Dante Culpepper, Jordan Love, Carson Palmer, Chad Pennington, Phillip Rivers, and Aaron Rodgers. A much different time for quarterbacks. Jordan Love, the only one in that group from
Because now I think there's a pressure. There's a pressure when you draft a guy that he's got to get in there right away. I think that pressure was less the further back you go. But you threw a lot of numbers out there, a lot of names. But the bottom line is, your batting average, your percent level of success was better, and we're talking about 25 years of sample, or almost. It's too early to judge. Some of these guys are just got drafted.
It was more than 20
years. It's about 20 years of sample sizes. Your percentage of success is better when you sat the rookie. So let's look at it two ways. Here are what-ifs that we can't ever know the answer to. What if Cam Ward were to debut this coming Sunday and had not played a snap yet, or maybe just a little bit here and there in garbage time? What would we feel? I don't know. And on the flip side, what if the Houston Oilers had thrown Steve McNair in there his first year and said, hey, he's the third pick in the draft, get him in there? What would have happened to Steve McNair's career? These are questions we cannot answer.
Yeah, you can't. Whether, you know, Drake May would have played the first game or ultimately the seventh game. One can argue, well, he would have, you know, at the speed he was learning when he got into the, finally got in, that's the speed he would have been learning when he got into the first slam. So eventually by week five or six, he would have been ahead of where he was actually at week five or six when he became a starter. So one can say that, but then one can say, well, he could have, you know, they could have lost every game and he could have threw three or four or six.
Right.
So
there's no way to answer.
It's no way to answer. But Cam Ward in this situation, I just think that he's shown, and people look at this certain ways. I get it. And the fumbles he has to be able to take care of the football. That's first and foremost. If you're going to be a quarterback in this league, you got to take care of the football because you have it 100% of the time. In your hand, 100%.
But did they even discuss it? I don't even know if they really even discussed
him sitting
for a while.
I'm sure
from day one he was in there. They threw it at.
I know. I'm sure that there was a. But there was never a time
they knew their roster.
No, but
they knew their roster was weak.
But there was never a time that I thought that, or anybody else thought. Now he could have, but. That Will Levis was going to be the opening day starter. I don't think there was anybody in the city that felt he was going to be opening day starter. But I think they would have loved for Will Levis to ball out and show everything. Then that would have gave them the excuse to say, hey, Will is playing great. Let's see.
So you're saying it was part of like, we cannot put Brandon Allen out there.
Exactly. They didn't want to put.
But why not? Like,
because Brandon Allen was he was brought in.
But if you're rebuilding, it shouldn't matter. Like, they put. The Patriots put Jacoby Brissett out there. They knew they were going to win.
But if I know this is, I'm basically a lame duck. I'm not going with him. I'm going with the guy we drafted. Either we going to do this with him and I keep my job, or I throw in Brandon Allen sure enough know we ain't going to do it.
Here's another example that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. The Giants threw Russell Wilson to the Wolves for 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it was, and then they put Jackson Dart in there, and Jackson Dart has done better, right? He's screwed some things up.
But Jackson Dart is playing just like a rookie quarterback.
Right, but they've had better success.
Yes.
They have a better team. The Giants have a better team.
They don't have Malik Nabers right now.
They don't have Malik Nabers. Their defense is much better than the Titans.
Let me throw another name.
No, it is. I mean, it's much better.
Because the Titans are the worst roster in the league, for sure. But
let me throw another name at
it. But it is interesting how they did not throw Dart out there for a few weeks.
Let me throw another name at you. Josh Allen. Josh Allen made his first NFL start in week 2 of his rookie season with the Buffalo Bills. By the way, can you name the week 1 starter for the Buffalo Bills in 2018?
Oh, man. Is he still in the NFL?
Hell no. Oh.
Is it a University of Tennessee guy?
No.
Gosh. Oh. Buffalo, week 1. It wasn't.
Give me the initials.
N.P.
Peterson?
Nathan Peterman.
University of Tennessee.
He went to Pitt.
He transferred from Tennessee to Pitt.
Yeah. Okay, there
Nathan
you go.
Peterman.
When he was at Tennessee, I would have said, there is no way that guy's playing in the NFL.
Well, what? He did.
But he did.
He was an opening day starter for the Buffalo Bills in 2018. Picks. So Nathan, by the way, the Bills lost that game 47-3 at Baltimore. So Josh Allen starts... Josh Allen starts in week 2.
Some rough times for the Bills.
This is my point. Had Josh Allen started 1 week earlier, would he not have been the MVP of the league in 2024?
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Did that 1 week make a huge difference?
Well, I don't know. Would they have lost 43-20 with him at the quarterback?
It may have been closer.
Yeah, would
Vince
have been
Young
closer?
Sat for 5 weeks or something like that and ended up winning the Rookie of the Year. Even it was Bud Adams that said, you're going to start Vince Young this week. Like one day after Norm Chow, the offensive coordinator, went on the radio or the coach's show and said, he's just not ready. He's not ready. We're trying to put him in a position to see where he'll be ready when he's ready. And then the next day, he's starting.
Because he's not ready, but
Bud went in there and say, put in VY. And it worked.
There you go.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction to the Titans 31-13 loss to the Patriots. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D. Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Some quote-unquote breaking Titans news courtesy of Adam Schefter. Tyler Lockett has asked for and received his release from the Titans, per source. Lockett is expected to be free to sign with another team after 4 p.m. Eastern Wednesday. Tyler Lockett's Titans career ends with 10 receptions on 21 targets for 70 yards and 0 touchdowns, although he did fall on the interception/fumble in Arizona. He will be a fabulous answer on your immaculate grid, Titans and Seahawks, at some point. Mm-hmm. But Tyler Lockett, we hardly knew ye.
Wide receiver translator? What do you got?
Seriously, isn't this what we have been talking about since the beginning of the season? How this thing was going to play out with the receivers. How I thought they wanted it to play out. Okay, Lockett, you in there right now. Jefferson, you in there right now. Eventually, Elliott could come in for Jefferson. That happened sooner than we expected. And what did I say? I said, next is going to be Lockett. I said, they're going to try to find to get DK in there somehow because they gotta grow with the quarterback. And what happened? Eventually, they just sort of he started getting reverses, started getting quick passes, and then he started getting a little bit deeper down the field. Then he catches a big one. This is what they're envisioning, their new receiving core. They just need an alpha. They need one stud young wide receiver. Elliott may turn out to be that guy.
I think that's a really good question. Is if they got the alpha, mm-hmm. would the other guys be in the right roles?
I think they would be.
That could,
yes.
you could win with.
I think they would be. I think Elliott would be as he continues to go, because right now he's a 2-3-2. That's what he is. Okay. Right now he has to play the two. And he's doing okay. He's a rookie. He's doing okay considering what the team is. But if you bought a bona fide, like even if Calvin's on a team, you bring a bona fide number one, not a guy that's a number one for you, but a bona fide, and I like Calvin Ridley, but I think right now he would be the equivalent, close to the equivalent, if not the equivalent, of what T. Higgins is at the Cincinnati Bengals, even though I believe T. Higgins is the number one, but he's playing that role and he's playing it damn well as the number two. He could be that if they had them a bona fide number one. So what happens is he becomes the number one, that guy. If you keep Ridley, he slides into two, or Ellick slides into two, and then whoever doesn't slide in that two, they the three, and you bring in DK on as board. So now you got four receivers, three of them that are going to be with Cam for the hope for the next 5-6 years.
Could this mean Xavier Restrepo?
Everyone ready to catch the strip?
For what?
Well.
Oh, yeah. They're going to bring him up.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they can bring him up now.
Catch the strip.
Or do you – I mean, it just depends. Do they want to go with a more veteran receiver and get somebody off of somebody else's practice squad or on waivers?
Because Bryce Oliver is injured, correct?
Yeah, Bryce Oliver is injured.
And Ridley's injured.
Mm-hmm.
Iomander, DK, Jefferson.
They kind of don't have a choice, right?
Yes. But
are there other receivers on the practice squad?
Is James Prochet still on the practice squad?
I thought he got picked up by somebody.
I don't know.
He may be on the practice.
I don't pretend to care
about the
Titans
practice squad. But
you
thought they would have brought him up instead of Mason Kinsey.
Well, Mason Kinsey.
Mason Kinsey, the ever-present practice squad guy. He was up.
Yeah, he was up.
I saw him in the game.
Yeah, he was up.
Game 7 tonight. In Major League Baseball, in the American League Championship Series, Mariners at Blue Jays, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. arrived for Game 7 in an Austin Matthews jersey. Did nobody tell him how Austin Matthews and the Maple Leafs perform in Game 7s? If the Blue Jays have a bad game, that picture is going to come back to haunt Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Vlad Guerrero has been absolutely tearing the cover off the ball.
Yes, he has.
By the way. And of course, he signed the big mega deal to stay in Toronto, so he's the man right now. But that was interesting mojo maneuvering there.
Yeah, maybe
no
not.
No doubt.
Maybe not the right call.
But look, watch Game 7. I don't care what sport you're talking
first
about.
First spot in the World Series.
Game 7s are awesome. That's going to be a great Game 7.
The World Series starts on Friday. If the Blue Jays win, they'll host the Dodgers. If the Mariners win, the Dodgers will host the Mariners to open the World Series. Speaking of baseball, an interesting story broke over the weekend from multiple reputable baseball reporters that Tony Vitello has emerged as the front runner for the Giants' managerial job, but it has yet to be finalized. By the way, should the sides agree on a contract per ESPN, Vitello would be the first manager in Major League history to jump directly from a college program to the big leagues without experience in a professional organization. And yet, Vitello, according to the Knoxville News Sentinel, was at Lindsey Nelson Stadium for Tennessee's baseball practice and scrimmage today.
That sounds very Tony Vitello. I wonder what he's told the team or if he's talked to the team.
As the story goes, this is from Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News
Sentinel. So you ask.
The Vols coach is a candidate for the vacant manager position with the Giants, but there was not a deal in place as of Tennessee scrimmage on October 18th. Vitello told Knoxville News afterward, nothing is done. He was at Tennessee's practice on October 19th throwing batting practice to players, sources told Knox News. Vitello addressed his team in right field following the scrimmage and openly discussed reports that he is set to be the Giants' next manager. He told his players that they would hear it from him if he was leaving for another job.
Do you think this is to get some extra money, or you think he's really
and
gone?
And how do you think he would do in Major League Baseball?
It's a great question because, as you just mentioned, it just doesn't happen.
There
have been a few guys who were great college coaches who ended up being Major League managers, but it's a very short list. Mm-hmm. And there's very few that I think have actually done well when they've done this. I think it is a vastly, vastly different environment day in and day out. We know And look, this is interesting that he's still going to practice, that it hasn't been finalized. It's been out there for how many days now?
A few. Mm-hmm. It was reported over the weekend.
Yeah. So, like you said, D-May, something could be going on. So it may fall through. I don't know. But this is what I would be really curious about, is his mentality of an SEC weekend, three-game series, everything on the line, the emotions his team plays with, that he teaches them to play with. That is just not how a 162-game baseball season goes, where you play every night.
He's not going to get up for a mid-July series against the Baltimore Orioles the same way.
You're up for series for sure, but like his kind of thing, where he is on the edge of the on the batter, you know, the on deck circle. Like he is barking at the umpire.
He's aggressive.
He'll come flying out of the dugout. He's been suspended a couple of times. Like, I wonder how that would carry over, especially with the replay system they have. It's not like Earl Weaver and Billy Martin back in the day where there was no replays and that was very common. But just the mentality and connecting with the players, I would be really curious to see how it went. Because I think he would have to adapt and adjust, much more so than the players adapting to him.
Oh, you never – I mean, if you're coming from the college ranks, there's never a "you adapt to me." No, you got to adapt to them. You got to adapt to stepping up. That's like saying, you know, you get drafted and saying, well – everybody needs to adapt to the way I used to play in college. No, you got to adapt to now it's the NFL and now it's the MLB. And that was my first question. Like, I don't know if there's been many managers that have left college and were successful in Major League, because as much as I look at football and I'm thinking that's tough in itself, like to go from, you know, a head coach at college with everything that it requires, and it's more than just, you know, the things that NFL coaches do. They got everything. That's why some guys get so burned out on it. But is it like that also for for managers in college baseball when they go up in ranks? Is it sort of the same thing, or is it more of an easier transition? Because I'm sure it's hard in the NFL. NBA, I don't know how hard it is. But you look at the four major sports and you think, which sports has the most – individuals that come from college to the pros coaching in recent years.
There's a much higher percentage of the players that played college baseball now, but there's still a period most of the time where you're going from college and then playing some minor league ball quite a bit sometimes before you make it to the majors. So it just would be a really interesting thing because it's unprecedented, right? There's plenty of assistant coaches. Like I know, for example, David Macias, longtime assistant coach for Tim Corbin, now I think the first base coach for the Padres, last I checked. But so there's a lot of guys that become coaches.
But not managers.
And the minor league level, and then move up to the major league. But going straight from being head coach, college, the manager.
Manager, yes.
In the big leagues without anything in between. That, you're telling me, Adam, that's never happened, right?
Never happened.
Oh, wow.
ESPN.
And it's not just any college coach. It's Vitello, who is one of the most unique college coaches out there.
I do want to give one more shout-out to Vanderbilt before we go. From the SEC, Vanderbilt avoids fine with, quote-unquote, delayed field rush. Vanderbilt University avoided a fine that accompanies the SEC's access to competition area policy by successfully executing a, quote, delayed field rush following its football game against LSU on October 18th.
Damn smart
Good
kids.
Good job, guys.
Smart kids. They know exactly when not to come on the field. Okay, 5 seconds. Hold on, everybody. Hold on. 3, 2, 1. All right, go.
Near the end of the LSU at Vanderbilt game, Vanderbilt communicated to spectators it would permit fans to enter the field after the visiting team cleared the field. Vanderbilt fans remained in the stands until the opposing team and officials had entered the playing field.
Here's one of the people that went on the field in delayed fashion. Mahoney Donick.
Mahoney Donick.
Who was home for fall break sporting the Willie Donick
He had on a 21.
Number 21 jersey from back in the day. The jersey I wore when the Commodores beat Shaquille O'Neal and the LSU Tigers. So
that is
good karma.
That is a one of one.
Yes, that is
one. Yeah, there's no others like that. They're not selling those at the bookstore.
I can't go to
They got Shaq sweat on it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you'd have to do a serious forensic
DNA
test to see. It's unlikely. So it's unlikely that I brushed up against Shaq at any point in the game. I did get in there in the game. I don't think I went up against Shaq. I stayed far away from Shaq. That was my strategy. Stay away from Shaq.
Don't go to your local vintage shop looking for a Willie Donig Vanderbilt jersey. You may not be able to find it. But that'll do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock live at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators open a 5-game homestand against the Anaheim Ducks. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, of course. Barry Trotz, for the first time this season, will join us face-to-face. The first two times we've talked to Barry Trotz, it's been over the phone. We will have Barry Trotz live at the desk at Barrel House tomorrow. So looking forward to that. Trevor Mathich will join us in the 4 o'clock hour as well. But the Commodore Hour is coming up next.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. Remember these two words, grace and forgiveness. Give grace and always forgive.
That's three words.
That's grace and forgiveness is two words.
And is a word.
Grace and forgiveness is two words. But
you could if you didn't.
Y'all hear that one word.
You put them all together.
Grace and forgiveness. Y'all hear that song. Don't forget about us. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, different place. Peace.